The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com, TrueGreen.com, to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Hello and welcome to the Circling the Bases podcast. I'm DJ Short, and with me here once again is Scott Pianowski from Yahoo. We're live on Twitch this afternoon, so welcome to those of you watching over there. And for those of you listening in podcast form or watching later on YouTube, we're recording on Monday afternoon. We figured, 6 weeks into the season at this point, Scott, a good time to talk about some buy low players. I think everyone's always on the lookout for these kind of players. You can look in the box score, you can look at the back of the baseball card and expect certain things, and you're not getting it early in the season. Maybe you can go out and grab some of these early underperformers. So we'll get into that in a minute. We'll also talk about some weekend fab, any interesting ads in our leagues. How's it going, Scott?
Good. Standing starting to have more merit. Second week in May. Playing a lot of golf. This was a fun fab week. Fab weeks are different. Some weeks you don't get in the mix a lot. I ended up getting with a lot of new players, so I'll have a lot to talk about when we get to the fab segment. But you know, with Yuri Perez coming up, and I know he didn't go five innings, but I mean, his swing and miss stuff was great in that debut. Yes. And he's got another start coming up soon, so I'm looking forward to that. It's we're seeing call-ups. We're seeing teams make changes. There's been some closer turnover, which there always is. It's easy to write off 2 or 3 weeks, whatever. It's not a big deal. It's early. It's May. Second week of May, middle of May. It's not early anymore. It's time to do something. And I think baseball reflects that. And I think it's certainly fantasy managers are feeling the same way.
As a Mets fan, it was nice to see a more Scherzer-like start from Max Scherzer on Sunday against the Nationals. Granted, the Nationals are not the most intimidating offense in the world, but they've performed better than I think a lot of people have expected. The velocity was up a little bit from Scherzer, which really should be expected because he's barely pitched over the past month. So plenty of time to recuperate from whatever is ailing him, whether it's the shoulder, the back, the neck, whatever it is. But either way, he looked a lot more like himself. So putting the fantasy perspective aside, it's great fantasy-wise, but also just for the Mets to have Verlander and Scherzer 1-2 going out there every fifth day and doing what they're supposed to do, I think is going to make a big difference for the Mets moving forward.
By the way, you mentioned Washington, not an intimidating drive. Yeah. I know we talked about him last week, so there's no need to go into a long thing about this, but Lane Thomas is their leadoff hitter. He's hitting 271 with some power, some speed. He's still rostered in just 21% of Yahoo leagues. I realize in some of the more shallow formats, maybe he doesn't hold value, but my thought when you were talking about Scherzer, I thought, oh, I wonder where Lane Thomas is at. I thought maybe he'll be 35 or 40% rostered, which would seem about right, closing in on that 50% threshold. 21% is light. He's been his OPS plus, I want to say, is like in the 110 to 112 range since he joined the Nationals. He's not a great player. He's a good player. I think he might hit leadoff the rest of the season. So get in on Lane Thomas if you can.
Yeah, I think there's some nice undervalued pieces in that lineup. And I was impressed by Luis Garcia, the young second baseman that they have. Alex Call is respectable, plays good defense. Dom Smith playing every day. Not as much power as you'd like, but they have some players there. CJ Abrams has swung the bat well the past few days.
Yeah, Joey Meneses has been okay too. Not great, but solid, playable, certainly rosterable.
Yeah. So they even on these losing teams, there's opportunity for value. So we're going to get into these buy low targets. Each of us have come up with a few names. Before we do, remember, download the RotoWorld app to receive breaking player news all season long. Stay ahead of the competition by favoriting players on your roster. Get the latest injury updates, player news, and much more delivered right to your phone. It's available in your app store today. So I'm going to kick things off here. I'm actually going to talk about a Met shock. I'm going to go with Starling Marte. And he's had a really weird start to the season. Does have 10 stolen bases, so that's propping up his value until this point. But he's hitting .235 with a .288 slugging percentage. 23 games since his last extra base hit. All of his last 18 hits are singles. Very strange. Now, I think the thing to look at here with Starling Marte, he suffered a neck strain on April 9th, so about 5 weeks ago at this point. It's almost certainly a factor here. I think being able to drive the ball, being able to manipulate your body at the plate you need to put a lot of power into the ball, I think that has a lot to do with it. Trying to play through that on a daily basis, you know, traveling across the country, all the things players have to do throughout the course of the season. I think that adds context to the situation here. The positives here. Contact rate with Marte, as good as it's ever been. He's not someone who strikes out a lot. He's not striking out more than he usually has. His expected batting average is 24 points higher than his actual batting average. His expected slugging percentage is .405, 118 points higher than his actual slugging percentage. Sprint speed is oddly low, but like I said, not stopping him from stealing bases. He has been dropped in the order recently, but he's actually been swinging the bat better. And even his outs this weekend, he's hit hard. So I think maybe he's coming around. Marte got off to a slow start last year as well, and then started to perk up and be one of the Mets' best players. So I have I'm very optimistic that Marte is going to end up being the player that he usually is.
Yeah, I like that call. You mentioned the lineup change. He batted second almost the entire season. Then the last week moved down to the number six slot. We certainly want him batting second for better volume and better opportunities to produce runs to be surrounded by the better hitters. The big thing for me with Marte entering the season was that, you know, it's an age 34 season, and you just wonder how much longer is he going to be interested in stealing bases. The most encouraging trend to him that I can see is that he's got 10 steals and he's attempted 13 stolen bases. So even at his age, he's still interested in running the Mets offense. It's a good chance to buy low on a lot of guys. It's been an underperforming offense. And I'd like to get in before that swells up. The thing with Marte is that if you trade for him and he eventually bumps up to the top of the order, whether it's on performance, maybe something happens to Brandon Nimmo, which we know a lot of times he can be an injury-prone guy, you're immediately going to feel better about Marte than the day you traded for him. I think it's a good time to get in on him. I'm going to open up my list. I'm going to, full disclosure, I roster all of these players on at least one of my teams. So I'm not just looking to buy low on them, but I'm looking for them to start playing better because I want my teams to do better. So if you want to say I'm wish casting a little bit, I'm probably guilty of that, but I have a case for all these guys. And the first guy I'm going to mention is Alex Bregman, who got off to a really poor start last year. He was coming off surgery. And then he was last maybe 80, 90 games. He was the Alex Bregman we thought. I thought he deserved to be a top 50 pick this year, even though he went a little bit later than that. So the slash, it's ugly. .204, .320, .322, I get it. But the Savant data suggests his batting average should be 46 points higher. His slugging percent should be about 100 points higher. He's still got elite walk strikeout numbers. He's really good with the walks. And you ask, well, what else could go right here? Well, Jose Altuve is currently on a rehab assignment. He's probably going to join the Astros this week. And you just put Altuve at the top of that lineup, and it just everything looks a little bit better. Yeah. Obviously, the guys behind Bregman can hit. Alvarez has been fine all year. Tucker maybe been a little bit of a disappointment, but and there's another guy. I don't think people in your league are probably trying to get rid of Kyle Tucker, but if you can get him at any perceived discount, I still think he's a top.
I thought about Tucker too as one of my mentions, but I'm just assuming it's going to be hard to pry him away.
Right. On this show, while we want to have wide appeal and range, we want to go in with the assumption that you're smart. And the people in your league are smart. Yeah, when people say, oh, you know, get somebody to treat Luis Arraez like he's going to hit 400, nobody thinks that, right? I mean, you can't execute that in any kind of a competitive league. And if you can't execute it in your league, you don't need our help anyway. You're just going to get the entry fees up front. Brick, I still think at the end of the year, let's put it this way. From this point forward, I would still project Alex Bregman to go like 275, 345, 470, something like that, with, you know, the rest of the year, maybe 15 home runs, decent run production, something that would project to like 90 runs and 90 RBIs in a full season. I still think he's like a top 75 fantasy player. He hasn't played like it thus far, but I think it's a good time to get in on him.
Yeah, it's amazing that someone could strike out less than 10% of the time and be hitting 204. I mean, it just sounds impossible to me. Mm-hmm. 206 batting average on balls in play for Alex Bregman. That's the last. It just will not. And I think this Astros lineup is only going to get better, like you said, with Jose Altuve coming back. I think it's a good opportunity to buy low on multiple players in this lineup, as you know, if you can, for that matter. Up next, for me...
Before you go into your next one, let me just say one other thing about Bregman.
Yeah.
This will tie into some of my other guys. The idea is, well, can you buy low on him? He's hitting 204. That there is somebody in one of your leagues who has Alex Bregman is looking at 204 and driving them crazy. That is something, and this is going to be a consistent threat. If the back of the baseball card has something that scares your opponent, you can take advantage of that.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And especially it's gotten to the point, and I'm sure this has happened in a few leagues, where you're maybe benching Alex Bregman right now. If you feel like you have a hotter hitter, you pick someone up off waivers, it's almost certainly happening right now. So look for that manager in your league and try to pry him away. I think there's a decent chance you could pull it off.
Let me say one other thing, and then I'll give you back the floor. So how do you buy low on anybody, right? What I want you to do is I don't want you to go to the Alex Bregman manager or the Starling Marte manager and say, oh, I want Starling Marte. He stinks. What do you want for him? Go. Let's say Marte, for example. Go to that manager. Maybe the guy in your league with Marte has a bunch of outfielders. Say to him, hey, you got some interesting outfielders. I could use an outfielder. You know, how would you rank your outfielders? This is one question I'd love to ask to kick off trade discussions. How would you rank your outfielders? Because if they give you a set of rankings that you can exploit, you can take advantage of, use them. If they give you a set of rankings you don't agree with, then you can disagree with them. You can negotiate off that, but let them try to show some of their hand. And asking for a ranking it's non-threatening. You're not putting them in any kind of vulnerable position. You're just trying to get some information out of them. Don't try to mention the player you want. I always think let the player come to. Okay, you want to trade for Bregman. Say, I need some help at corner. And maybe the guy's thinking, oh, yeah, I've been looking to get rid of Alex Bregman. I'll pawn him off on DJ or Scott, whatever. Let him come up with Bregman. Don't name the guy you want. Let the other player name the guy that you're actually trying to get.
Right, because as soon as you say it, then it's pretty obvious what's going on.
Right, for sure.
Especially with a buy low type of player. So, and again, we're anticipating that all of our listeners and viewers are very, very intelligent because they're watching and listening to this show. So,
for sure.
Of course. So next up for me is someone who we had high expectations for coming into the year and has actually delivered from accounting stat perspective, but otherwise kind of ugly and looks like a step back, and that's Bobby Witt Jr. So going into play on Monday, Bobby Witt Jr. is hitting .233 with a .271 on base percentage. Like I said, those counting stats are there. 7 home runs, 18 RBIs, 12 stolen bases, 26 runs scored over 41 games, gets the volume at the top of the Royals lineup. But you, from the outside looking in, you could look at him and say, man, like, he's taking a step back. 39 strikeouts against 9 walks. Last year, he had 135 strikeouts against 30 walks. So the flawed approach. But with Bobby Witt Jr., the expected batting average so far is actually .260, expected slug .491, and then you see he's hitting the ball harder than he did last year. In fact, 91st percentile in barrel percentage. So you're seeing a player making a lot harder contact, has a lower batting average than he had last year, but that's just a surface stat. Really, what he's done to this point is equal, if not better, than what he did last year in terms of quality of contact. And he's still the fastest player in all of baseball. So the steals will prop you up no matter what. And I expect him to steal a lot more bases going forward, assuming he gets on base more. He's actually a player that I put some money down on to lead the majors in stolen bases this year. I'm not sure if it's going to happen, but 12 is a pretty decent starting point here. So I would go for Witt. He has the multi-position eligibility. I think there's a chance you could pry him away, especially with From a manager who maybe has a lot of speed, maybe you could pry him away there.
Yeah, I like it. I feel like 233, 271, 442 is about the lowest. That's the worst that he's going to do if he's healthy.
Yeah.
And I love sometimes stolen bases, the best place to get steals are from a team that's not contending, that just kind of has a DGAF YOLO approach on the bases. And I feel like the Royals are one of those teams. In fact, it feels like whenever Witt steals a base, they come in pairs. He's like multiple games this year where he's stolen more than one base. And yeah, even with that ugly average in OBP, the 7 home runs, the 12 stolen bases, that still probably makes him like a top 50 fantasy hitter. I thought it was misguided when he percolated into the first round of some leagues because that priced in improvement. But I get it. I understand it. Obviously, he's a pedigree guy. His father was a Major League Baseball player. He had a long career as a starting pitcher. Ironically, his father walked the ballpark. The big thing with Bobby Witt Sr., he had unbelievable stuff, but he walked a lot of guys. And, you know, mm-hmm. I guess that walk gene hasn't passed over to his son. But Bobby Witt Jr. still just in his age 23 season. And it's a case of why might you be able to get low, buy low on him? Because maybe the other manager paid a first-round pick or paid an early second-round pick. He thought he was getting a different player, maybe a little bit frustrated. I feel like Witt, the rest of the way, probably going to hit 260, 265. You mentioned he's got that elite speed. Anytime he puts the ball in play, any ground ball in the infield, he has a chance to beat out if they don't field it cleanly and zip it to first base, because this guy can fly. The home runs are still – he's still on pace to hit about 28 home runs. So I think it's probably – you're seeing the low end of his range right now. I think it's hard to lose on a trade with Bobby Witt unless he gets hurt. I think it's a good time to get in on him. Earlier I talked about Bregman walking a lot. The expected stats are in his corner. That's the story with Josh Bell. Walk rate of 15%, which is just crazy high. He's average, according to the StatCast data, should be 37 points higher. He should be slugging about 70 points higher. Not elite numbers. Josh Bell is never going to be like a major thumper, but
yeah,
I think the rest of the way, there's no reason why he can't hit for a plus average and maybe hit 15 home runs or something like that. The Guardians offense has not been very fun. Maybe there's been an adjustment period for Bell heading to the American League. He's been traded a couple of times. Bottom line is his approach to the plate is so good. And the expected stats say that he's got a slash line right now that doesn't reflect the hitter he is.
Yeah.
And I know he's available in some leagues because I'm in a mixed league. I think it's like a 13 or 14 team mixer. He was dropped. I said, okay, I'm going to spend some fab on him or some waiver priority. I forget what I had to give up. And of course I had to cut somebody. I cut Jesse Winker, who I apologize to anybody who took my Winker advice because he's done nothing and he hasn't been really healthy, but that's kind of the Jesse Winker story, it seems like, most seasons. So I was happy to cut Winker for Josh Bell. I feel like there's a lot of upside here. Again, now the only thing, one caveat I will mention, is sometimes when you see guys with really good plate discipline, but they're not hitting as well, you wonder, are they taking too many good pitches, right? Maybe they should be a little bit more aggressive early in the play, in the count. I think that could be part of Bell's problem at times, but still, he's a better hitter than what he's shown so far. I think the Guardians, I know they're kind of swimming against the current in today's day and age where they're trying to put the ball in play. They're not really a thumping team. And some people roll their eyes at that, thinking maybe they made the playoffs last year in spite of themselves. I get that. I totally understand. But I still think Josh Bell the rest of the year hits for a good average, hits a few home runs. And nobody with a walk rate that high should be hitting for this low an average.
Yeah, I wasn't banking on, you know, was it 2019 with the Pirates, 37 home runs, 116 RBIs. He's not that player. But I was thinking he could hit 20-plus home runs. I thought he would drive in a ton of runs with the table setters in front of him in that Cleveland lineup. I still think that has a chance of happening. Maybe not 20 home runs at this point, but 15 homers and a good amount of counting stats, too, with his ability to get on base. I think this is a good time to get in on the ground floor with a Guardians lineup that I don't think is going to be great, but I think they could be better than what they've been. Andrés Giménez, Ahmed Rosario was always a slow starter. So I think there's pieces here for the Guardians to get better for sure. One quick reminder here before we move on. Sunday morning means MLB Sunday Leadoff. Watch exclusive live games all season long on Peacock this week. Check out the Yankees take on the upset-minded Reds in Cincinnati. Catch the action live this Sunday at 11:30 a.m. Eastern time. Love that graphic. Very pretty. Yankees-Reds, that should be a really fun game.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? When we come through, it's true magic. 'Cause we came to play at Walt Disney World Resort.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
Hear that? It's the call of the Crave. And when the Crave calls, you know what to do. Try the $5 Bacon Bundle, because the only thing better than a White Castle slider is a White Castle slider topped with crispy hickory-smoked bacon. So pick any two of either the Bacon Cheese Slider, 1921 Bacon Cheese Slider, or Chicken Bacon Ranch Slider, and also get a small fry for just $5 with the $5 Bacon Bundle. White Castle. Follow your Crave.
Next up, for me, I'm going to go with Joe Musgrove. Now, if you remember, Musgrove fractured his big left toe in late February. He dropped a kettlebell on his foot during a workout. He was actually on track to make it back sooner than originally expected. Suffered a minor shoulder injury trying to make a play on his rehab assignment. Didn't end up making his season debut until April 22nd. And so far, it hasn't been great. 6.63 ERA through four starts. Has pitched back-to-back starts against the Dodgers. His most recent one, four runs allowed with four walks in 5 2/3 innings. This was this past Saturday. So 19 strikeouts, eight walks in 19 innings so far. The control has been off his last two outings. But you look at the expected ERA, 3.93. Current ERA, like I said, 6.63. So huge disparity. And something closer to what you would usually expect. Musgrove is actually throwing harder this year than he did last year. Again, small sample, back-to-back starts against the same team. That's always a tough thing for a pitcher to do. The Dodgers know him very, very well. I think as we get more of a sample here, we will see the Joe Musgrove that we expect. So if someone who waited on Musgrove and is frustrated by this first string of starts, I think it's time to maybe ask around.
I like it. I remember who he was for the Padres the two prior seasons. ERA of 3.06, a whip of 1.08. Those are outstanding numbers, more than a strikeout per inning, good control. San Diego's still a pitcher favoring park. So his slow start is to be expected because he had to ramp everything down when he got hurt in spring training, but it wasn't an arm-related injury. And as you mentioned, one thing you always look at when a pitcher's struggling, like, well, where's the velocity? Has there been a velocity dip? No, he's actually throwing harder. So you would think, we don't know for sure, but you would think that would illustrate that he's healthy right now. So yeah, I think Musgrove, it's a good time to get in on him. Let's give you another pitcher to look at. A lot, thing we talk about a lot with ERA and whip is when they tell different stories, trust the whip. And that's what Logan Gilbert's doing right now. He's got 3.91 ERA, which is a little bit troublesome, but his whip is 1.02. Those two numbers don't match. His expected ERA is 2.94. So I feel like the 1.02, maybe it's a little bit over his skis, but I think the rest of the year, Logan Gilbert has an ERA in the low threes, has a whip maybe around 1.7, 1.8, 1.10, whatever like that. Very playable. And his strikeout rate is up and his walk rate is down. Yep. So many things are moving in the right direction. I think the only thing that's wrong is the whip. So I don't know. Your opponent who has Gilbert is going to value him. It's not like he's some of these other guys. Maybe there'd be motivation to make a trade. I don't think you're going to find a manager who's like, Gilbert's killing me, because he'll see he's doing a lot of good things. The strikeout numbers are good. The whip is good. I just think there's a chance you may find a manager who doesn't maybe value Gilbert as high as he should. I still think he's a top 25, top 30 starter, and I would be happy to pay that price and feel like I can make a profit on it the rest of the season.
Yeah, I mean, it's nice when all of the advanced metrics align. So the xERA with Gilbert, 2.65. The FIP, fielding independent pitching, 2.67. The xFIP, 2.98. So just in every possible area, you're seeing that the results aren't quite matching up to the peripherals. That's usually just, you know, these are all just little pieces of information that show you that he's pitched better than the results indicate. doesn't predict the future, but it certainly points in a promising direction.
Agreed. Go get him.
Yep. So I want to mention one more pitcher, and this is someone I was high on coming into draft season, Jameson Taillon. Recently missed some time due to injury, and the results so far have not been great. 6.41 ERA through five starts this season. But you look at the peripherals here, 25 strikeouts, six walks in 19 and two-thirds innings. He's throwing just as hard as he did last year. Started throwing his cutter more this season, so he's experimenting with his pitch mix, trying to figure out what's working for him. We know the Cubs did try to evolve the pitch mix to get more swings and misses. It's happening so far, but it's still kind of a work in progress for him. And again, this is only five starts. I have big expectations for Taillon this season. I think we're going to see much brighter days ahead for him, and I do think there's a very good chance you could get him for next to nothing. He's also been dropped in some leagues, so I think this is the time to get in on Taillon as well.
I like it, and I'll mention there's been a new adoption in my household. Dog named Jimmy. He was already named Jimmy at the adoption event. I was just getting some pet food, saw him, fell in love with him. I thought, well, I don't have the heart to change Jimmy's name, but I kind of want to change it anyway. So I'm actually, his official name is Jameson, not after Taillon. But so if you hear some barking in the background, it could be Abby, our girl dog. It could be Jameson, our boy dog. They're getting acclimated. I've always been a Taillon guy. I liked him in Pittsburgh. And then he became one of those guys like, oh, yeah, get him out of Pittsburgh. Let's see how his career spikes. It's been a matter of staying healthy. Actually, a lot of guys in this Cubs staff who are interesting to me right now. But I think Taillon is a guy to go get in on. We mentioned earlier what makes somebody motivated to make a trade or what could make one of your opponents nervous. I'm sure if they look at Kyle Schwarber's stats, and we know when you draft Kyle Schwarber, you're not getting batting average. You have to find a fix for that somewhere else. And I'll admit, I thought he would get maybe a bump up with the new shifting rules. That certainly hasn't happened. But 178 is not what Kyle Schwarber you should expect. His career average is 230. And going forward, I looked under the hood for some interesting illumination stats on Schwarber. I don't really see anything that different than the guy he usually is. I would think the rest of the year he hits, I mean, maybe he won't hit 230. That's his career average. That's a good place to put the over-under. Maybe he hits 220. Maybe he hits 218. He's not going to hit 178. The power is still fine. He's got nine home runs. His counting stats aren't bad. And now they have Bryce Harper back. This offense is going to, I think, be on the upswing going forward. Because somebody in your league is looking at that 178, and how do you hit 178? You have a lot of over fours and over fives in there. Somebody, wait till Schwarber has like maybe a three-day series where he doesn't get any hits or something, or maybe even now just that 178 may motivate a trade. Again, say you're looking for an outfielder, say you're looking for power, let them come to Schwarber. I know some of you can get this guy far under his market value.
What's weird with Schwarber, he's been all over the lineup this season for the Phillies, so I think that's part of it too. Last year, he was just right at the top. This year so far, second, third, first, fifth. I think finding that consistent lineup spot will probably help him. And I think another weird thing with Schwarber, he stole 10 bases last year. Mm-hmm. So far this year, he has none. And you'd think in a year where teams are running more and more that, you know, maybe he would do that. We'll see. If he finds his way back to the top of the lineup, maybe he'll feel like that's more of like his job to do. But I think just the Phillies getting Bryce Harper back takes the pressure off a little bit. Maybe Schwarber's been pressing, feeling like he has to do everything. Of course, they also lost Rhys Hoskins, so he was, you know, sort of the de facto big bat in that lineup. We'll see if he relaxes there. You know, the Phillies stadium, as it warms up in the summer, we're going to see a lot more of those balls go over the fence. So I think it's a good time to target Schwarber as well. Very good call on that. So let's get into weekend fab and some interesting pickups. You mentioned Yuri Perez, and after the recent prospect pitcher call-ups, I think the market has been set, especially in leagues where there's a $1,000 budget. You're going to pay $300 at least to get a top prospect pitcher. That's what I saw in Tout Wars mixed draft this past weekend. Perez went for 310. And in my TGFBI league, he went for 327. So I'm wondering where he went in your league.
Yeah, I want to give a shout out to Ron Chandler, who was my proxy manager at the Tout Wars mixed auction. And he went off the ranks I gave him and the plan I gave him and assembled a team that very much was in line with players I liked. There was one player he got me, who I didn't have a green or a blue next to, like, as a target in the reserve draft. He took Yuri Perez. Nice. And that was all Ron. And my team right now could really use just a push, a little step on the gas with pitching. And I'm hoping Perez can provide it. He certainly looks the part. I mean, he's mm-hmm. 6'8", I think he is. He only went 4 2/3, I want to say, in his opening start. But if you're on Twitter, people are just sharing GIFs and videos of Perez, because he's got nasty stuff. He's going to strike people out. I'm not worried about that. Now, the question, of course, is how many innings will he throw? He's only 20 years old. So you would think the team would probably have a pretty low ceiling on that.
Yeah.
In labor, he was available, and you only have $100 fab, and there's no zero pickup. So you got to be careful with this fab. And I'm like, well, I don't want to blow all my fab on Perez, but I want to make a competitive bid. I bid $17, and that was enough to win, which surprised me a little bit. But you know what? A lot of times when you win a bid, you can easily second guess yourself, like, oh, maybe the rest of the room is right and I'm wrong. In this case, I'm like, thank you. I need Perez. Let's get him out there. Can't wait to see. I think he gets Washington this week too, which makes me excited. But Perez in some of my other leagues was going around that $300 range, 30% of fab. He's that type of guy, because people see somebody who could be a comet, and just, again, I think you're getting like 100, 110, 120 innings, something like that. But I think they're going to be really good innings.
Yeah, and Gavin Williams is, I think, the next prospect pitcher to watch with the Guardians. We talked about him in the waiver wire episode last week. So just set your expectations. When Williams gets the call-up, assuming he's not already rostered somewhere, that's basically what you're going to have to pay to win these fighters. So pay attention to sort of this formula and what we've seen over the past couple of weeks. So if you really need pitching, that's what it's going to cost you. So it's a lot, but the upside is incredibly high. So some other interesting names in my leagues. Christopher Morel was a hot pickup this past week. Of course, Nico Horner landed on the injured list. I don't think he's going to be gone for very long, but Morel can play second base. He can play third base, outfield. He can play all over the place. I think even when Horner comes back, that Morel will have a place in this lineup. He was straight up mashing in AAA, even more than Matt Mervis.
Yeah, I like Morel, and he's gotten off to a really good start with the Cubs. Yeah. He's already hit 3 home runs. And the thing, how real was that power in AAA? Because last year, he hit 16 home runs, slugged 433. That's good. He's a little bit on the shorter side, 5'11", 145, according to his baseball reference page. It's not somebody you think of as a slugger, but maybe he's reinvented himself as that. And Morel could play 3 or 4 different positions. So so many different players could either get hurt or slump, or Morel's in the lineup, or maybe he's even a super utility guy when everybody is healthy. I think I want to say I bid maybe $86 or $88 in my TGFBI and won by $2. Very satisfying to win a bid where somebody bids in the neighborhood of you. As it turns out, my TGFBI offense is fantastic anyway. What I really need is a pitching influx, so maybe I can use Morel at pitcher, but I don't know if that's going to work out. But I did get Morel there. And also another guy we've been chasing, maybe this is a fool's errand, but we've been chasing saves with this team all year. And we've been wondering, is it Fulmer? Is it Boxberger? Is it Alzolay? Well, Mark Leiter Jr. was the guy getting the handshake last week. And then there was a game where he came in with a 4-run lead and the Cubs had extended the lead in the 9th inning. So I wonder if he was I wasn't watching the game. Somebody might pay attention. Okay.
Yeah.
I suspect Leiter was probably in line to get the save, and then they just took away the save opportunity. He still pitched the 9th inning. To me, I give credit to that. To me, that means they're ready to push the button anyway. So if he gets two, you know how saves are. The baton is the thing. Possession of the job is the thing. If he gets the next save or two for Chicago, maybe they say, okay, we found our guy, and he ends up rolling to 15 or 20 saves. I think that's in the range of outcomes. He was not bid on as aggressively as I thought. Not that I thought people would be blowing their fab for him, but I thought people would go after him a little bit more aggressively than they did this weekend.
Yeah, that's a good call. I actually think Boxberger, he could be on the fringe of being DFA'd very soon.
I DFA'd him in a couple of weeks.
I did too.
His numbers are terrible.
Yeah, they're not good at all. So I wouldn't be surprised if he's just gone altogether very soon. So I think it's a smart idea to look to some other names in this bullpen. AJ Puck is dealing with dead arm right now, so that's something to keep an eye on. Waskar Brazuban with the Marlins has been outstanding this season. 1.93 ERA, 28 strikeouts, 7 walks in 23 and a third innings. He is tied for the lead in holds on the Marlins right now. So if you want to grab a
reliever in case, you know, we'll see what happens there with Puck. I think he's a decent name to speculate on. I added him to my TGFBI roster this weekend for not very much. James Paxton, what did you think of his first start back? That was pretty shocking.
Yeah, I gotta admit, Paxton's a guy I think he's one of those guys that Chiefs has gone bad, and it's going to take a lot for me to believe in Paxton again.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. By the way, you mentioned the Miami situation. Also, keep an eye on Dylan Floro, who's only rostered in 24% of Yahoo. He's got 4 walks, 18 strikeouts. I want to say he did get a save this weekend. So he's also a hat that could be in that ring. I don't know what it is, DJ. I don't trust anybody in the Boston pitching staff. I think they're a really fun offense, and there isn't – I guess Kenley Jansen you would roster for the saves. And yeah, I thought it was really bogus how Wilson Contreras kind of gamed him into a walk on that Saturday appearance, and Jansen blew the save. That's the rule – the new rule's going too far. I think they need to clear some of that out, where it looked like Contreras was ready for play, but he wasn't, and Jansen was ready to throw, and that's not satisfying. I don't think it's going to happen a lot. I think they'll kind of iron it out and the players will adjust. But be that as it may, I can't roster anybody in this pitching staff other than Jansen.
Understandable. So a name that I got for really cheap in Tot Wars mixed draft this weekend is Brandon Melt. I mean, have you looked at his numbers this month? He's hitting 407 with a homer, 4 doubles, 1167 OPS. I mean, you can't really count on him to stay healthy, but if you need a corner infielder in a deeper mixed league, I think Brandon Belt is a great target and a good lineup right now.
Yeah, I didn't realize he had kind of turned it around. I know he didn't hit a thing in March, maybe. You know, again, not just the league adjustment, but, you know, he's living in Canada now, and so that can be an adjustment for a player too. We look at things off the field that maybe can affect somebody's focus or their comfort level, and any way into that Toronto lineup is interesting to me. Player I ended up with in a few teams, and I don't know if anything is going to come of this. And I guess nobody really wanted Mickey Moniak but me. Right. But the Angels called him up. First game, he gets 3 hits. He hits a home run. He steals 2 bases. Second game, he gets a hit. He scores a run. He batted lead off both games. We know the Angels lineup maybe isn't the deepest in the league, but you're hitting first. You're in front of Trout. You're in front of Ohtani. That's where you want to be. I don't know, maybe this guy, Moniak had good AAA numbers. He had a pedigree and first-round pick, I want to say.
Number one overall to the Phillies.
Oh, was he the number one? Okay, I knew he went early in that draft. I didn't realize he was the number one overall pick. I will talk myself into anybody who the prospect hounds were all hot over 4 or 5 years ago, 2 years ago, whatever it is. I love a post-type story. And look, they don't always work out. I'm kind of waiting for Nick Senzel to pop. We talked about him a couple weeks ago. I'm sticking with him. The Reds get a Colorado series this week, so I'm hoping maybe Senzel takes advantage of that. But I don't know. Moniak, I added him in a few leagues. It wasn't that expensive. I'll see where it goes. He's on a short leash. He'll be like the first guy I cut if I need some reinforcements. But I think this next week will tell us a lot about what his story is going to be. I feel like at this time next week, we'll either be like, oh, yeah, he's kind of carved out a role. He started all week. He kept that leadoff spot. Or, okay, he went 3 for 18. He didn't play on Sunday. Maybe. And look, is it kind of silly that the team will evaluate him on a really short sample? I get it. Yes, it kind of is. But that's what we have to do. We have to play off a short sample sometime. The bottom line is past pedigree is here. He's already shown the ability to hit home runs. He's shown the ability to steal bases. And I think he's going to hit leadoff for an offense, at least the top half of it, makes me interested.
Speaking of post-type and the Angels, do you ever think Joe Adell gets it together? He's still just 24.
The only thing with Adell is that the only things I like about him is past pedigree and his age, right? He's still just 24. That's what you have to mention with Adell, because everything he's done on the field has been so dispiriting, but I don't know. Maybe he just needs a change of scenery. Maybe he'll be a guy who'll get traded to the Padres or the Yankees, and all of a sudden he'll figure it out.
Yeah, I think I saw a story last week where the Angels internally are afraid to trade Joe Adell because they think he could flourish elsewhere. In AAA, granted, it's the Pacific Coast League, but 13 homers and a 1017 OPS across 37 games. It's just an interesting contrast with Moniak is up and Adell is mashing in AAA and he can't get a shot. One other name I picked up this weekend, just seeing where this leads, is Hunter Harvey with the Nationals. He's been lights out this year, 1.96 ERA, 0.93 whip, 20 strikeouts and 18 and a third innings. I mean, we'll see what happens with that Nationals bullpen if they trade off any useful pieces there. Maybe Harvey stays and ends up in the closer role. We'll see. But I'm on a team where I could use all the help I can get in the late innings, speculating on some of these relievers. I think Harvey's a pretty good one to speculate on in deeper formats.
Yeah, I like it. One of the relievers I picked up in that similar vein is Chris Stratton of the Cardinals. 3 walks, 23 strikeouts, always chasing that walk strikeout rate. I don't know that he's necessarily going to get saves because they have other options, Hensley and Gallegos. We got a couple saves this week. But I still think the Cardinals – maybe the Cardinals got their act together in Fenway Park against the Red Sox. And yeah, man, it'd be fun to see Nolan Arenado play there all the time. He hit a home run in all 3 games of the series. But I still think St. Louis is an 83-85 win team, something like that, impressed with what Stratton has done. Let me close with this. A player I didn't know what to do. I think I got one share of him, but in one league I forgot he was available. I don't know what to make of Dominic Fletcher, who's come up to Arizona and just – he's a powder keg, man. 5'6", 185. And he 429, 455, 691 through 13 games. He's hit a couple of home runs. He's driven in 13. Obviously, nobody's this good. But and I realize he was old for the AAA level at Reno and Pacific Coast League, whatever that means. But 323, 417, 559. If he was 21 or 22 years old, we'd all be jumping up and down. He's 25. We kind of eye roll it. But he always hit in the minors. He's gonna. I gotta figure Arizona gives him a spot. Sees where it goes.
Matt McClain is another interesting one with the Reds, and that kind of snuck under the wire depending on what type of leagues you're in, how late in the evening your fab was. But McClain's numbers in AAA have been outstanding this year. 12 homers, 10 stolen bases through 38 games, hitting .348 with a .474 on-base percentage. He's getting the call up by the Reds today. If you got in there... You might have snuck up on a lot of people and got them for next to nothing. I saw that happen in a couple of my leagues as well.
Right. We know they have a hole at shortstop, and we're waiting for Ellie De La Cruz at some point. It's going to come up, but I mean, they're not going to push him at his age. So, McClain's bat has certainly, and again, you mentioned the cadence of it, right? I wish I had seen that news earlier. I would have grabbed him in a couple of leagues, but let's see what he does. I think he's a chance to hit the ground running.
Yeah, for sure. So that'll wrap it up today. Hopefully you got some good pickups in your leagues as well. And if not, we'll be back for Waiver Wire Wednesday coming up later this week. Remember to subscribe to Circling the Bases wherever you get your podcasts. And if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, be sure to rate and review if you like what you're hearing. Also, follow us on Twitter if you don't already. Scott is at Scott_Pianowski on Twitter. I'm at DJ Short. Take care, everyone. We'll see you next time.
Dietz and Watson's been making meats and cheeses the right way since forever. What's that mean? It means never cutting corners, ever. It means cooking, not processing. It means our Virginia brand ham that's cooked to perfection, then twice baked to layer the flavors. It takes more time, but you can taste the difference. We come to work every day to do it the right way, even if it's the hard way. Because if it's not right for us, it's not right for you. Dietz and Watson, it's a family thing since 1939.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.